Hello and welcome back to our Blue Saris radio show. I'm excited to introduce our show sponsor, Blue Saris Consultant, managing partner, Michelle Hager, who has coordinated a panel of experts to record a fascinating webinar scheduled on August 24th called Virtual First. You can register online at blue-saris.com to hear this Virtual First panel. Some great topics. This telehealth webinar is also it's a previous webinar that discusses a virtual care ecosystem that lowers the cost of healthcare. Also with Michelle is Blue Saris Senior Consultant, Christy Musser. Christy is a Senior Director of Virtual Care and Patient Experience at St. Luke's University Health. Christy has been an agent of change in Dot Connector, spearheading quality and process improvement initiatives across multiple healthcare settings. Her recent focus has been in digital transformation efforts to improve clinical communications within the care team and leverage technology to connect patients to the right care and right person at the right place and right time. Hello, Michelle and Christy. Please tell us why Virtual First Solution is realistic and provide help us lower healthcare costs.
Oh, thanks, Joe. It's exciting to be here on the show, and it's great to be on the show with Christy. The previous webinar that I did around Virtual First was kind of an introduction to the topic, and this panel that we're going to be convening is going to include an attorney, Christy, as well as one of the experts from Thomas Jefferson University, Frank Seitz. So we're just going to have a great discussion about Virtual First and what that means. Virtual First perspective, why is it realistic to provide care this way and how will it lower cost? When you think about the idea of Virtual First, or even when you think about something that you do today, like banking, you don't first think about going to the bank. You probably first think about depositing your check via your mobile phone or going to the ATM. And probably, 20 or 30 years ago, maybe more than that, we may be aging ourselves, you would think, well, I have to go to the bank if I need to get some money. I have to go to the bank if I need to deposit a check. The same thing is true for healthcare. Now we'll see, or the premise of this discussion is whether or not healthcare will go in that same direction, where you won't think about going to your doctor's office first. You won't think about going to the emergency room first or the hospital first. You'll think about doing a virtual visit first. And in fact, the insurance companies, because it is a lower cost of care, will in fact potentially require you to do that in the same way banks do. Sometimes you can't even go inside of some banks, or they may be completely virtual. And the same thing is true for healthcare. And what I'm gonna ask you, Christy, what would you add to that, and how would you describe why Virtual First is a real potential?
So thanks, Michelle. Yeah, absolutely. I think during the COVID, insurance companies saw how we could resolve so many issues virtually, and so they're, in their minds and in what they're seeing and the evidence is showing is that if we can do this in a more cost-effective manner, right, where it's not taking up a brick and mortar space, it's more efficient, it takes up less time, then why not resolve these things in that manner versus having to go in person? And I think, our system has been developed around a brick and mortar mindset. Right. And absolutely. So I think we're doing a lot in person that we just don't need to do.
Right. And we know hospitals lost a lot of revenue during the COVID in 2021. And due to a mounting backlog of surgeries, it's been difficult for them to get back on track. Tell me, Michelle, how does this change a hospital's care delivery model?
So it's a good question. In COVID, I think we don't have a lot of press about this, but maybe some have heard some about it. I see some areas of the media discussing this, but lots of patients' procedures were held off during COVID. Things that were defined as maybe not as a priority or wasn't obviously related to a COVID diagnosis or a potential COVID diagnosis. So that meant that patients with cancer screenings, regular scans and things like that related to their either cancer or other illnesses that may require scans, like, kidneys or liver, other type of organ issues that people may have, those were all put off, which means that those diseases had time to grow before it was noticed. So these are high costs for patients, right? Because now their disease process has moved forward. That means the healthcare that has to be provided to them has to be more intense and probably more painful, et cetera. So when we think about the cost of care, when hospitals have lost revenue, and obviously they want to care for patients primarily. You don't go into any health system across the country, and that's not their primary goal, is to care for the patients that they're responsible for. All the clinicians are thinking about that as a priority, but it is, unfortunately, the way that our health system is set up. It is a business, and they're looking at lost revenue and how do they reclaim that? And therefore, how do they care for this balance of caring for patients and maintaining or lowering the total cost of care? And telehealth falls right into that, any of the virtual care models. The reason why the total cost of care is lower is because obviously real estate, you don't have to pay for the brick and mortar locations that we've been talking about. And we already see lots of businesses, including healthcare businesses, shedding some of the real estate that they have.
Right.
Because they don't need that real estate. They're able to decentralize workflows where they're able to virtualize some of their care. And this is one of those ways. So not only are you able to access the patients in a more effective and an efficient manner, but you're also able to reach those patients with more services. So say, for example, you're in an area where even in the Boston area, now everybody doesn't want to go into Boston, quote unquote, into Boston to get healthcare, right? Maybe
right.
Going into Boston isn't like a very convenient thing for you to do. That means that you have to take your entire day out for your child to be able to see the specialist or see the person that they need to be able to see. Well, what if we didn't have to go into Boston to do that? What if we could be on the South Shore, or we could be in Brockton, or stay where we exist in the state and have our child or ourselves be able to access that specialist in our own pediatrician's office or our own primary care office? So you're extending care, you're reducing the cost of care, and you're decentralizing care so it's more convenient for patients. Go ahead, Joe.
A much better care delivery model. It's mm-hmm. more efficient and easier and better access. That's a good point. And we had Signature on last month with us, and they're certainly beefing up their virtual care platform. So that's a great point. Is there any data showing racial and economic disparities hindering these health inequities?
I'll say that there's some, certainly some data. It kind of goes back and forth on racial inequities, because some data is showing that there isn't any inequities along racial lines. And then other data we're seeing coming out is showing that there is. But there's definitely economic disparities. We know that social determinants of health, talk about this all the time. Your zip code should not define the level of care that you have, and health and telehealth helps cut straight to that, because that cuts through the whole zip code idea. No matter where you are, you can access care. What would you add to that, Christy?
I agree. These artificial boundaries that we've put around, telehealth up until this point have been very challenging to work around. And you have disparities of health everywhere. And we definitely need this in our rural areas. And this whole virtual first concept can definitely improve care in those rural areas where patients have even, increased transportation issues. But we have so many economic disparities right in our backyards and in urban areas. And, so it's just everywhere. And we really need to get away from that geographic artificial boundary and be able to provide care, from anywhere to anywhere.
So that brings me to my ranking question for our country. Where does our country rank in offering healthcare to Americans versus the amount of money we spend to offer them healthcare?
Yeah, we were talking about this off camera, quote unquote, right? And
yeah.
you know, this is a tough one and to swallow as Americans, because we always want to be, you know, as good as we can be and to try to, you know, provide the best care that we possibly can in any kind of scenario. But the data doesn't bear that out. And Christy pointed it out. You want to quote the statistic there, Christy?
Sure. We lead the world as far as cost, but we are not the leader in any area as far as outcomes. So high costs, unfortunately, outcomes not soon. Now we do well in some specific areas, but again, we definitely aren't leading in outcomes. Another thing contributing to that, which I really feel telehealth can address, is more of that social determinant of health piece. You know, we've in our country have historically relegated our healthcare to healthcare only, and have not incorporated those really critical elements of social determinants of health that impact our healthcare status. And so, you put telehealth into the mix, and you're really employing a lot of different strategies, not just direct patient care, but also self-help material. You're getting patients more engaged and more proactive in taking care of themselves, which you know, involves a lot of those social determinants, their health, their lifestyle, the access to resources. So if we can start addressing more of those and get those to the front line, I think we're going to start seeing a shift in how we are as a population of healthy people.
Yeah, it affects everybody.
Yeah, it affects everybody. And there's something called, not to get too geeky about this, but there's something called the Maslow's hierarchy of need, mm-hmm. which is directly related to social determinants of health. So for those that may not know what social determinants are, it's all about whether or not, you know, the first thing you have to think about if you're, say, for example, homeless, you're not thinking about, oh, I need to get to my doctor's appointment, right? So your first things that you're thinking about are, do I have food for today? Do I have somewhere to sleep? Are my children safe? You know, right. Am I able to be somewhere safe? So you have to solve those problems first before patients will focus on healthcare. So when you think about, you know, whether or not this person might have food insecurity or might live in a food desert, healthcare is not going to be their primary concern. They're going to be thinking about, how do I get my next meal for my family or for myself? And so that's their priority. So helping them with these social determinants, because without good nutrition or any nutrition, they're going to have healthcare issues. So they continue to cycle on each other. So it's an interesting one here, because telehealth can help that, because if I'm doing a virtual visit with somebody who is in a scenario where they might have, you know, a food desert, or there might be a challenge in their home. I can tell you a story of one of the clinicians that, you know, they had this patient coming in every single week with rashes and all sorts of things, and it never could solve the problem. Did a, you know, home visit, virtual visit, and guess what? They have pets and who make them happy, and they're not going to say, well, get rid of the pets, right? So it's like, well, no, we need to actually pay for flea bombing in their house on a regular basis, so that they don't have fleas that are biting them and they're allergic to them. So you start to do that, and guess what? They don't have to come to the emergency room now because their rashes or they're oozing and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So these are the types of things that a virtual visit can help see. And it is kind of a difficult one, because sometimes patients that are challenged with food and other insecurities don't necessarily have the internet. So that's one of the big challenges with telehealth, and we have to solve that problem. And there's a lot of different avenues that we're currently, you know, that the industry is working on to try to solve that, including sort of making telehealth and the connectivity more of a utility instead of an extra nice to have. It's not cable TV anymore. It's access to school. It's access to healthcare.
Right. Good point. And you said difficult, but it's such an easy solution when you do have all the information. What's next in healthcare? I wrote this question out just looking back from the 90s when President Clinton introduced the new HIPAA laws, and we saw paper-based EMR records becoming popularized. And then 2000 to 2010, we introduced a computer-based EMR. What's next? What's the next big thing? Is it telehealth, virtual care?
You want to take that one to start, Christy?
Absolutely. And I say yes, and I don't know if that's just bias confirmation there, if that's a bias yes, but I absolutely think that this is next where we're going, and not just in the, I think we have to think though beyond, and it's kind of funny to say historical telehealth, but really, you know, the beginnings of telehealth, which is really just an urgent care sniffles and, you know, or the EICU. Those are two of the big, you know, beginning integrations of telehealth. But really beyond that, and what our care delivery model looks like is a hybrid model. And everything's starting as virtual first, as we, you know, go back to the whole bank scenario and analogy, is that the first thing you do is not go in to see a doctor. You address the issue either virtually, or you go to your app, you know, to check certain vitals and different, you know, things that may go into some sort of algorithm to give you some outcomes or advice or guidance. And you leave the brick and mortar scenarios and resources for those very serious things that need to be dealt with emergently, or your things such as immunizations and, you know, those that require in person. So it's really just really moving everything towards that first you start with virtual and get everything you can taken care of that way.
You're saying it speeds things up.
It saves unnecessary wasted time.
Yeah.
We only have limited amount of resources. Let's just be honest. There's only so much space, and there's only so many people that can actually take care of, you know, from a clinical license perspective and then your space perspective. So let's save the space and let's preserve the people and have them working at the top of their license and figure out a way to just do this better.
Yeah. There's also, from a patient perspective, technology like wearables, where you can be more in touch with your care. If you have AFib, now the Apple Watch is telling you if you're an AFib or not, right? I mean, so, and then there are other technologies as well that do that, and other wearables. I mean, you can go to, you know, sports, Olympic sports people there, and all the athletic, you know, athletes that are in college sports and pro sports, they're wearing shirts and clothing that aren't just dry fit, but they have sensors on them that can tell them, you know, how much water are you losing for the day? How's your heart doing? What's your blood pressure? There's no reason why those types of technologies couldn't be incorporated into everyday clothing every day. So you could just sky's the limit, you know, it could be anything.
Mm-hmm. So this is my last question. And this is sort of the power question. Like, big companies like Walmart and Amazon, we know they're looking for ways to get into the market with their company and everything they can offer. How are they preparing to offer virtual care? How are they preparing for the future of providing care? Is this something that we need to, you know, be aware of? And are they going to be a competitor for these hospitals if their virtual program's up and running and you're a rural health medical clinic? You know, what's going to happen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they already are. Amazon announced, what was it, last week, Christy? They purchased a big health group, a big physician group. Mm-hmm. They're already providing virtual care services to their employees, which are vast across the country. Walmart has already been providing kiosk-type healthcare with physician services and nurse practitioner services inside of many Walmarts. And you could see that in any other store that exists prolifically across the country, you know, if that's Dollar General or Target or, you know, anything, or even in every single post office or every single school. This is a place where primary care and non-complex care can happen. And you can think about this as a patient, you know, how much of a challenge or inconvenience is it for you when you know you have an earache because you get earaches all the time, or your kid gets earaches all the time. The last thing you want to do is, oh, I got to schedule an appointment to see my pediatrician or see my primary care doc. Instead, you could just go virtually and utilize these doctors from Amazon and Walmart. And you can see how that care delivery model might evolve. That you've got a virtual visit. Oh, you have an earache. No problem. I'm going to send you the prescription, Amazon, via a drone. And that ends up on your front door in 2 hours.
They're going to really, they're going to rock our world as in the ambulatory space, especially. They're going to really redesign that landscape. And they wouldn't be in the game if they didn't think there was a future in this game. And they've got a lot of good intel there. But all of their models revolve around a virtual first concept. Yeah. And they're really focusing on heavy on the patient experience. So when they, if they can get the patient experience, really that subjective experience, they're going to really capture a piece of that market. And they're starting to employ some non-traditional partnerships, some innovative partnerships with them, you know, direct to employers. And then they're really starting to figure out the insurance piece as well. So that's kind of the last piece to the puzzle before they really make it big. But yeah, they're formidable players in this. And I think we need to figure out how to work with them, in addition to keeping ourselves afloat.
Yep.
And Google is involved kind of behind the scenes. There's a whole bunch of, you know, you can kind of see how this would evolve where you're going to see it. Let's think of an Amazon Prime, you know, purchase that you do. They're really good at logistics. If you did the same with healthcare, okay, you purchased an Apple Watch from Amazon Prime, and you connect it to Amazon Health. Now Amazon Health can monitor you and start to keep the data. Obviously, if you choose to keep that, you know, choose for them to keep that, but they'll provide the patient benefit, which is to let you know, hey, you're dehydrated, drink some water. Not just you need to drink 3 liters a day. This is legitimately how dehydrated are you? And monitoring you and notifying you that you have, you know, certain things happening with your body. And that would be very valuable for people to be aware of.
Wow. That's exciting and scary at the same time. So if you don't have your virtual program going and you are delivering care, you know, Blue Cirrus is here to help. And please register for the virtual first panel that will be on August 24th. You can register at blue-cirrus.com. Put that on your calendar and listen to Christy and Michelle and the rest of the panel go over this topic and the pros and cons of virtual first. Thank you, Christy and Michelle. I appreciate your time and expertise to speak with us regarding virtual first solutions and the future of healthcare. Michelle, please stay with us as we will be speaking with Executive Director of the American Telemedicine Association, Kyle Zebley, to help explain ATA's position on advancing telehealth, ensuring that everyone has access to safe, affordable, and appropriate care when and where they need it, enabling the system to do more good for more people. This is 95.9 FM WATD. We'll be right back.